now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Indeed, 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 it's the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am here. We are live. This is Chris Featherstone on behalf of Crave Wrestling. Derek, our world correspondent, will be here live and in living color, if you will, soon. But, of course, we got a loaded show tonight. We got our Night of Champions. I got some stuff to say about Night of Champions. Also, of course, Raw, SmackDown. We're going to touch on SmackDown barely, and then, of course, the Ring of Honor, if time permitting. And, of course, we're going to do the Impact Wrestling as well, as they held their No Surrender TV special. And the flavor of the week this week is the second part of the Nation of Domination, Thumbs Up or Down. We've been getting some good reviews on the Thumbs Up or Down series. And so we're going to do that, the Thumbs Up or Down series, and part two of it. Call in live, 347-884-8452. And we're just going to continue to have some fun. First trivia question of the night is, what year did Shawn Michaels turn on Marty Jannetty? What year did Shawn Michaels turn on Marty Jannetty? And already we got a correct answer, 1992. Technically it was 1991 because the taping was in December of 91, but it was aired, you know, the delays, usually around 3 weeks or so, up to a month delays back in the early 90s. So it was aired in January of 1992. So either or would have been accepted, 91 or 92. And before we go to Night of Champions, let's do one more. Who is known as the Human Suplex Machine? You can go to Twitter at Crave Wrestling or go on the chat room live. Either or is apropos to answer the question correctly. Or you can call, we got it already. Great job, Taz. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. We will hopefully be taking a number of calls today, but we do have a lot to cover. So, you know, don't hesitate to call in live, 347-884-8452. Let's go to Night of Champions. Primetime Players defeats Usos, Tons of Funk, Real Americans, and 3MB to become the number one contenders. That was on the pre-show Tag Team Turmoil. Made sense. It made sense. Primetime Players is the number one team right now as far as hottest team, hottest babyface team right now. I still personally am an Usos fan. They're my favorites. I think as far as a tag team, they're twin brothers. They're polished. They got the whole Samoan heritage to them, and I definitely appreciate them as a team. They remind me of like an old. They're like a hybrid of a lot of teams from like Samoan style tag teams. The head shrinkers, the Samoan SWAT team back in the day. They're more of a Samoan SWAT team than a head shrinkers type of team, but they still are just passing on the Samoan lineage of the Wild Samoans, if you go even further back. So they're the third generation notable Samoan tag team. And so the Wild Samoans were tag team champions. The Head Shrinkers were tag team champions. Now it's time for the Usos to continue the lineage and be the third generation tag team champions, which I believe this would be a potential first ever time that we'll see a third generation tag team champion. So we shall see if the Anoa / Fatu family becomes tag team champions. My guess is they're such a polished tag team, they will eventually, but for some reason they just keep getting the shaft as far as WWE giving them the go-ahead to be a top team. Yeah, but we'll see. We'll go over Raw and see what happened there for those who didn't look at Raw. But I did get some good emails. I did get a really nice, encouraging email of someone saying that, sometimes they miss Raw or SmackDown, and Pancakes and Power Slams does a great job covering the shows. So I want to appreciate you for sending that message, and we are here to do that. Thank you so much, and I appreciate your support. And keep it going, because our numbers are starting to increase. It's actually went up. This is the third straight week that we're increasing. And just thank you so much. I'm just excited about the numbers continue to increase, and so keep the streak going. We had record numbers. We had record numbers recently, and they're just continuing to increase. So thank you so much for all your support. Thanks to Power Slams. We just have a great time at Pancakes and Power Slams. We just have a great time at Pancakes and Power Slams. There's certain things that just causes us to just laugh. Do a lot of laughter. We're just having a good time. All right, let's keep our composure here. Next question is, who did Hulk Hogan defeat to become the unofficial AWA champion? Who did Hulk Hogan defeat to become the unofficial AWA champion? Again, thank you so much for listening to us. We are episode number 77, and we are on our way to 100. We got some fun things going on. We got more laughs, more fun. This is just an amazing. I'll tell you what. I think I need to ask more difficult questions, because we already have an answer, which is Nick Bockwinkel. Great job already. I guess this is trivia night. I guess I'll just keep going, as well as Night of Champions and Raw and the rest of the shows. All right, let's go to the beginning of Night of Champions, which, let me start off by saying this. I'll give you my final thoughts on Night of Champions, how I believed it was compared to all the other pay-per-views of the year. But from the very beginning, I believed that Night of Champions was in a slightly elevated Raw show. I was so disappointed when I saw Triple H come out and cut a promo, and then Heyman and Axel comes out and cuts a promo, and then he schedules a match for Axel's Intercontinental Champion. But oh no, it's not with CM Punk, which it should have been, but it's not with CM Punk. It's with what Triple H says, the first person he sees in the back. And oh, so coincidentally, he sees Kofi Kingston in the back. And there you go. There was a tweet that said, I'm paraphrasing, but there was a tweet that said, it's interesting that people are in the back and they still have their gear on ready to wrestle. And that was pretty funny because it's true. Like, oh, okay, well, I'm not scheduled to wrestle, but I'll still have my gear on just in case Triple H just so happens to cut a promo in the beginning of the pay-per-view and see me in the back. I can just imagine Kofi Kingston, somebody see, he watches a monitor from the back, and he's like, ooh, let me hurry up and go right by the right by the backstage curtain. Hey, it's me. You see me first, ha-ha. And so basically, Triple H couldn't have, you know, he couldn't help but to, you know, live up to his word and have Kofi Kingston come out. Hey, you cut me, Kofi Kingston, remember? And so it's just so coincidental. I think it was just a bad way to really book the beginning of the show. And I thought in my head, like, I know it's going to be Kofi Kingston, but I really hope it's not Kofi Kingston. And then SOS. I'm like, oh, okay, well, there we go. I mean, the match wasn't bad, though. I mean, I must admit, the match wasn't bad. The other matches that Kofi Kingston and Curtis Axel had wasn't bad either. I mean, Kofi Kingston has that ability. I mean, he's a heck of a wrestler. He's, to me, he's the modern-day Tito Santana. I mean, he's actually a better wrestler than Tito Santana, but he has that mid-card, babyface, lovable gimmick that is just, to me, what it seems like is going to be a long-standing career babyface mid-card wrestler. And, I mean, can't everybody be champions? He's had, like, over a half dozen mid-card championships already between the U.S. and the Intercontinental title. But, I mean, they still won't elevate him to world champion level. I think that Kofi Kingston could be a world heavyweight champion. Because they gave him an opportunity a few years back to when he was feuding against Randy Orton. That's when he started cutting promos. That's when he got out of the Jamaican gimmick. And it worked. He actually got over. And he actually defeated Survivor Series a few years ago. He was the sole survivor of his team. And he defeated both Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton within, you know, seconds of each other. He beat both CM Punk and Randy Orton, two, you know, former world champions, within seconds of each other. So if they really give him a shot, I believe that Kofi Kingston could be a decent world heavyweight champion. I mean, you've put on a great Khali. You have it on Alberto Del Rio. He's better than both of them. So that pretty much says it all right there. All right, let's go. Next we have AJ Lee defeating Natalya, Naomi, and Brie Bella to retain the Divas Championship. I must admit, this is probably the best Divas match of the year. And that's not really saying much, but at the same time, I got to give it to them. The double sharpshooter from Natalya, I've never seen that before. It was very innovative, and it was just a decent match. It was just a lot of action going on. I think you need to have more matches like these to really showcase the Divas division, because AJ Lee as champ is quite boring, to be honest with you. I mean, she cuts weird promos during, you know, matches, but that's really all we get. I mean, she had a decent feud against Caitlyn, which I have no idea where she is these days. Where the heck is? When I just said Caitlyn's name, I just remembered that Caitlyn is a WWE diva. That goes to show how much she's really not recognized anymore. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see more of Caitlyn in the future. Not quite sure about that. However, she's not very missed. So hopefully we will see more of the Divas division in the future. And Hopefully we'll see more like multiple divas in the match. So we shall see. We shall see. We shall see. We shall see. Let's go to the next match, which is RVD defeating Alberto Del Rio by disqualification. There's a spoiler alert of who is going to be Alberto Del Rio's next opponent at Battleground. Of course, I'm not going to spoil that, but if you want to know, check out WrestlingInc.com. However, I do think that the DQ victory was a bit cheap. I think that it would have been best if this feud already had an awkward build to it from the very beginning. And I think that the Christian build was much better than RVD's. There's no question that RVD is more over than Christian is, but the build was much better for Christian because it was more of a one more match feel to it. But RVD was more like, okay, well, we know that you're not going to win the title. We know that you're like Jericho 2.0 right now as far as putting stars over. Del Rio doesn't need to get over. I mean, he's probably the most boring world heavyweight champion in the past decade, other than the Great Khali. That's probably the only. Swagger was very close, but at least Swagger had, at least it was a trial and error period for Swagger. He had his belt for like a little over 2 months, and they're like, oh wow, this is a big mistake, and he's back, and he went back into oblivion. But for some reason, they're continuing to shove Alberto Del Rio down our throats, and Alberto Del Rio has not been relevant since probably, I think his pivotal moment was WrestleMania 27. He won the 40-man Royal Rumble back in 2011, and then WrestleMania 27, he lost to Edge. So he won the big Royal Rumble, but still lost to Edge for the World Heavyweight Championship. I think it was a bit premature, too. I know he had this monstrous push and was beating everyone in sight, put Christian on the shelf, put Rey Mysterio on the shelf. He actually had a match against Kofi Kingston. Speaking of Kofi Kingston, a match against Kofi Kingston at, I believe it was Elimination Chamber of that year, right, the pay-per-view before WrestleMania. So he still lost the Edge. Although I do think that the push was a little bit too meteoric, I do think that him beating Edge would have helped his career much more, because when he lost, and then he lost the subsequent month when Edge was forced to retire after he won at WrestleMania 2 years ago, he was forced to retire, and then in the ladder match between Christian and Alberto Del Rio, and Christian won that one. And then Del Rio was trying to win, and he still wouldn't. Then he eventually won Money in the Bank in July, casting in a month later. I mean, 2011 was his most successful year on paper, but he was, speaking of paper, he's more of a paper champion. And Del Rio's just not over. He doesn't have any more charisma. And I was expecting Ricardo Rodriguez to actually turn on Rob Van Dam and go back with Alberto Del Rio, because he needs that. But DQ win and RVD gets the upper hand. We did see a pretty nice-looking Van Terminator, reminiscent of his old ECW days. That was pretty nice. But other than that, that's all we get, and we'll see where the angle goes from here. Next question. What year did Brock Lesnar debut in the WWE? What year did Brock Lesnar debut in the WWE? And we already have an answer. That is 2002. So great job there. Next question. The Intercontinental Championship was established in what year? All right, let's go to the next match, which was Miz versus Fandango. By the way, this pay-per-view is called Night of Champions, and goes to show how lackluster the pay-per-view is, because we get a match that has been mildly billed, but for some reason they decide to throw it in at the Night of Champions pay-per-view. Now, Fandango's never been a champion, and The Miz has not been world champion in almost 3 years. So probably more of 2.5 years. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. WrestleMania 27 against John Cena, when The Rock was hosting. He lost it a month later. So May of 2011 was the last time The Miz was champion. So, you know, about 2.5 years. So, Miz versus Fandango, it didn't mean anything. Miz won, but it was just an awkward match to be on Night of Champions, and nobody really cared, including myself. Next was Curtis Axel and Paul Heyman against CM Punk. Interesting turn of events here. Basically, Punk puts Axel in the Anaconda Vice and makes him tap, and so he has some Singapore Kane moments with Paul Heyman. For some reason, Paul Heyman was outrunning CM Punk. I don't understand how that was possible. He was trying to catch up with CM Punk. He was trying to catch up with Paul Heyman, and he ran across around the arena, but for some reason still couldn't catch up with him. I think that was pretty awkward. But somehow he caught up with them right before they got to the ring, throws him in there. He has some more moments. He has another "I'm going to break your face" comment. And then all of a sudden we see the big guy, Ryback, spears Punk through the table. Heyman pins Punk. Tell you what, to have a 434-day run as WWE champion, he's had a lousy 2013. If you think about it, let's think. January, this is September now, so we only have 3 more months left. Had the belt for 434 days, won it at Survivor Series of 2011, defeated Alberto Del Rio, and he kept it until January, kept it to the Rumble. January, he lost to The Rock. February, Elimination Chamber, he lost to The Rock. April, WrestleMania, lost to The Undertaker. May was Extreme Rules, and CM Punk goes to show us 2013. Who did he fight at Extreme Rules? CM Punk, anybody who wants to go to the chat room, call in live, tweet at Crave Wrestling. CM Punk, he went against, you know what, I actually can tell you, here very, very soon. I go back into my archives. CM Punk, I'll tell you the results of Extreme Rules, actually. Miz defeats Cody Rhodes. Chris Jericho defeats Fandango. Dean Ambrose defeats Kofi Kingston to become new U.S. champion. Sheamus defeats Mark Henry. Alberto Del Rio defeats Jack Swagger. The Shield defeats Team Hell No. Randy Orton defeats The Big Show. John Cena defeats Ryback. And Brock Lesnar defeats Triple H. he did not fight because I remember after he lost against The Undertaker, he told Paul Heyman that he was going to go away, and that's when he was gone, and he came back and did his little face turn. So he didn't fight in May. June, he came back for Payback, so he defeats Chris Jericho. So three, so far, he's 1-3. July, he lost the Money in the Bank, so we'll count that as a loss. So 1-4. August, he lost to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, so that's 1-5. And September, he lost to Paul Heyman and Curtis Axel. So after being champion for 434 days, the only win that he has is June. He's only had one pay-per-view win this year. So he's had a pretty lousy 2013. I knew that his record wasn't that impressive, but I just to think that he only won one time the whole year is quite lousy. And that win, of course, was against Chris Jericho. Because, come on, let's face it. Who doesn't beat Chris Jericho? And that's coming from someone who Chris Jericho is their favorite wrestler. But we got to admit, who doesn't beat Chris Jericho? All right, next we have, and then as far as Ryback's concerned, him being a Paul Heyman guy, I'm not buying it. I mean, they're scraping and trying to make Ryback a relevant guy. To be honest with you, the only thing, what I see from this is a further extension in the role of CM Punk trying to get his hands on Paul Heyman. Now Ryback's the person who's stepping in, you know, the fray to prevent that from happening. Ryback could just lose to CM Punk at Battleground. I mean, that's probably the best we'll get. So essentially, Ryback is still going to be used to put someone over. And Ryback, more than anyone, needs to put someone over at this point in time. So I don't see anything coming from it. Ryback being a Paul Heyman guy, he might be in a list of Matt Morgan, Nathan Jones, and others, Atal in literature or journalism or literary lingo. And then we have Dean Ambrose defeating Dolph Ziggler. That was pretty much a given. Dolph Ziggler's not really... he's not really getting pushed. Still in doghouse because of that interview, reportedly. But we saw it different on Raw. We'll see where that goes. But don't really see much from Ziggler. Although he should. I've said it before. I think this is Dolph Ziggler's time to shine to become a top guy. He needs to work his way in the mid-card as a babyface. His babyface momentum, I think his babyface pops is getting better. I think people have adapted to him as a babyface. And I think it has the potential to work. They just need to give him the go-ahead to become a top guy. And I think winning a mid-card title would help him. I think it would help him much more than having Dean Ambrose having the title. Because to be honest with you, with the Shield being involved in the corporation angle, they don't need the titles. They should drop the titles. They don't need it. They're mercenaries or henchmen from the corporation, for the new corporation, and they don't need the titles. There's no point in the Shield having the titles. They can be utilized by other people, and the Shield can just fulfill their role as hired henchmen, so to speak, for the corporation, the new corporation. Shield defeating Primetime Players, like I said, you know, Shield doesn't need the title. Primetime Players, I think they need to have a little bit more of a build to become tag team champions right now. I think their time when they were heels, there was a time that they really were very popular. I think their change of their music hurt them, because the whole millions of dollars don't really go in sync with the current theme song. It's not a horrible theme song, but it's not compatible with their millions of dollars chant. Next week, and then we have Daniel Bryan defeating Randy Orton. Awkward. It was awkward. The match was good, but the whole bumping out Scott Armstrong, and somehow he goes back into in the ring eventually, and then he does the fast count. It wasn't. The fast count was pretty evident. It was pretty evident that he was that this was going to drag over to Raw. But to be honest with you, all together, Night of Champions, for SummerSlam to be such an amazing, amazing pay-per-view. And I know that that's their second biggest pay-per-view of the year. You know, you can basically call it the WrestleMania of the summer. I understand that. It actually was better than WrestleMania. I would say the SummerSlam was better than WrestleMania. However, for them to have such a amazing pay-per-view in SummerSlam, one of the best in years, to have Night of Champions, which was basically a glorified Raw, is disappointing. It's incredibly disappointing for that to happen, for them to basically, talk about your thrown together pay-per-view. Now, Night of Champions, over the past years, it had more prestige to it. You know, it was basically a minor pay-per-view similar to Money in the Bank that became very popular. That was a great concept. But this year, it was thrown together. To put Miz and Fandango in there, to have promos. And you had, as a matter of fact, you had the Riley Park commercial. What? Who in the world would want to pay $45 to watch a commercial on a pay-per-view? That is absolutely absurd to have a commercial on a pay-per-view. And it's so funny that I even tweeted that. I said, we see an in-ring promo, what's next? A commercial, and then soon after that, a commercial comes on. And just absurd. It goes to show how much they were trying to kill time, because the card was just so thrown together, and it just wasn't good. It was the worst pay-per-view. I say arguably just to have somewhat of a rational stance, but the more I think about it, it's no dispute. Night of Champions was the worst pay-per-view of the entire year. And, I can't think of a pay-per-view that was worse. And on top of my head, even last year, I can't think of any pay-per-view that was so bad. I'm sure when Derek, the Raw correspondent, comes on, he may think of a pay-per-view that was just worse than Night of Champions this year or last year. But I really can't think of any pay-per-view that was as bad as Night of Champions. It was such a horrible pay-per-view thrown together. It didn't seem like they had any stock or any interest in this pay-per-view. Basically, I think they basically duped many people out of $45 because it was just a glorified Raw to me. So hopefully we see better. Hopefully you see better in the future, but I'm not too big on just their direction with storylines. It was such a high. It was so feverish before, and even after SummerSlam, but it's starting to become typical WWE booking again. So just like I said, the whole Brock Lesnar, Curtis Axel comparison last week, this week I'll say SummerSlam, Night of Champions. Pretty much says it all. All right, let's go to Raw. Before that, next question, we got the 1979 correct. Great job. Next question is, what was Steve Austin's nickname in ECW? What was Steve Austin's nickname in ECW? All right, WWE Raw, it's from Cleveland, Ohio. Night of Champions was from Detroit, by the way. Daniel Bryan promo interrupted by Triple H, brings out Scott Armstrong and addresses the fast count. Armstrong whispers to Bryan, "They got us." Bryan was bewildered. He had no idea what he meant by that. Triple H hears it, strips Bryan of the title, and Bryan, basically unaware, he was just very surprised and shocked. Pretty much, Orton comes out, and Bryan reluctant of handing over the title, and he gets RKO by Orton, and Triple H takes the title, which leads to a backstage segment with Triple H and Randy Orton and Stephanie McMahon. Orton wanting the title back, and Stephanie McMahon yelling at Orton saying, you know, we need to see the old Randy Orton back, and refer to their feud with Triple H and Randy Orton when for WrestleMania, when Triple H was handcuffed and Stephanie McMahon was DDT'd and Orton kissed Stephanie. It was actually a good build. So she brought that back, and it kind of put a mean streak in Randy Orton. I was expecting something like this. I just don't understand why you would use a $45 pay-per-view just to say, yeah, we're going to strip him of the title. I mean, talk about a lack of creativity. I mean, this is what we get. We get a fast count at a pay-per-view, which leads to a stripping of a title at Raw, and most likely the title won't be, I mean, it's actually been reported today on wrestling.com that the title is not expected to be, champ is not expected to be crowned until the pay-per-view, which is Battleground. It's less than 3 weeks away, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, I'm okay about having 12 pay-per-views a year. I remember they were up to 14 before in 1 year. However, I mean, you got 3 weeks' time, and it's like Night of Champions was so thrown together. Now you have less than 3 weeks to have another pay-per-view, and I'm not so certain about the success of Battleground. I'm not very confident that an inaugural pay-per-view like Battleground. No, don't get me wrong. Payback, it was inaugural. It was the first pay-per-view of its kind this year. Payback was probably one of the top three pay-per-views of the year, I would say. I would say, in order, number one is SummerSlam. Number two is WrestleMania slightly, and I would say three is Payback. I think Payback was a very good pay-per-view. Royal Rumble was decent, but I didn't like the Punk and Rock match. I think it was overrated. Also, was not a fan of John Cena winning the Royal Rumble. But I did like Jericho coming back. His comeback was very unexpected, and I think that that was one of the highlights of the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. Again, the current question is, what was Steve Austin's nickname in ECW? All right, next we get Dolph Ziggler defeating Dean Ambrose, kind of puts him back in the U.S. title picture. I mean, Dean Ambrose just needs an opponent right now, and that's what it seems like. I don't see Ziggler winning the title. I hope he did. I would be a fan if he did. But I really don't see it. Fandango defending R-Truth, throwaway match, trying to keep Fandango relevant. Then we get the Dusty Rhodes in-ring promo. The type of promo that Dusty Rhodes did was, it was old school, but it was just kind of a shell of itself. It saddens me because Dusty Rhodes is one of my top three favorite wrestlers of all time. However, the promo that he cut just really didn't do much, unfortunately. And then Stephanie McMahon comes out, and she gives Dusty a choice to reinstate either Cody or Goldust, and Dusty didn't want that burden, so he rejects it. Then the Shield appears. Stephanie also brings out Big Show and gives Dusty a choice to be either dismembered by the Shield or knocked out by Show. Dusty doesn't choose that either. So Stephanie actually sicks the Shield on him, and then the Big Show stops them, and then we see Sappy Show again, and he knocks out Dusty Rhodes, who couldn't even take a bump. Basically, he had to pretend that he was knocked out standing and kind of had to be just kind of gracefully put down by Sappy Show, and more sappiness, and carried out on a stretcher, yada, yada, yada. Very odd segment. The only good thing I can see from this is that I reported today on Bleacher Report. There was rumors from F4W Online via wrestling.com that we may see a Rhodes Family versus the Shield match at Battleground. And to be honest with you, I wrote an article on Bleacher Report, you know, do you want to see basically Dusty Rhodes wrestle again? Honestly, even at 67 years old, almost 68, I want to see it. You don't even have to be, it can be a hot tag. Cody Rhodes and Goldust are both very good wrestlers. So the only thing, and Seth Rollins, I mean, it's a six-man tag. So he doesn't even have to be in the match for all but, you know, 45 seconds or so. And Seth Rollins is one of the best sellers in WWE. And so Rollins is in the match, and basically, you know, the whole hot tag scenario, say Goldust is in the ring or Cody, they're being beat up, they have the upper hand, and all of a sudden, hot tag goes to Dusty, he does the old school punches, he does the flip flop and fly elbow, then he gets speared by Roman Reigns, and then he goes out, then he goes out the match. That's it. That's all we see from Dusty Rhodes, and I think that that is fair enough. But we need the nostalgia. We need that old school Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, if you will. We need the American Dream to be in the match for his sons Cody and for his son Dusty and Goldust. The American Dream is here to align himself with his sons against the Shield in a six-man tag team match. And if my boys do win, they will have a job back in the WWE, Stephanie McMahon, if you know what I'm saying. They're going to get funky like a monkey, live and in living color, if you will. There you go. That's my Dusty Rhodes. Thank you very much. I appreciate all of your support. Dusty Rhodes right there, live and in living color. So there's my Dusty Rhodes promo, and I think we should see Dusty Rhodes for 2 minutes tops. 2 minutes tops. Don't take the mystique out of the nostalgia. We need Dusty Rhodes 2 minutes tops, speared by Roman Reigns. And then all of a sudden he rolls over, gets a tag, and then he's out. You know, he's out the match. So the Rhodes family should win. So go Dustin and Cody, get their job back. I'll be all in favor of that. I wrote a pretty good scenario just fantasy booking for a second. I wrote it on Bleacher Report as far as how they should carry the angle between Cody Rhodes and Goldust to WrestleMania 30. Check it out on Bleacher Report. It's Dusty Rhodes to wrestle at Battleground? That's the article. Check it out. It's on the breaking news session right now of Bleacher Report. It's got over 20,000 reads, I believe. And so check it out and read it yourself. Because if you do, you realize that you're going to get funky like a monkey with the American Dream, if you will. And the American Dream is going to be here at Battleground next month with my sons, Cody and Dustin. And we're going to make this happen one more time, live in living color. Next match, we have what? We still don't have the right answer, ECW, which is, I'll say it, Superstar Steve Austin. That was his name. Question is, who is the longest reigning WCW champion in history? Who was the longest reigning WCW champion in history? Next we have on Raw, we have a Divas match. We have Brie Bella, Naomi, and Cameron defeating Oksana, Alicia Fox, and Layla. And next we have RVD defeating Damian Sandow. I mean, there's really nothing to say about the Divas. I mean, we've seen this match like 8 times already, and the heels have never won. I just don't understand it. It's just not a point. You just keep putting this 6-man tag. Why don't you just have, like, some type of Divas Gauntlet match at Battleground? Just throw all of them in there. Because from what it seems, because Natalya and AJ were both in the commentating booth, it seems like we're going to see Natalya and AJ. I'll be okay with that, honestly. Just as long as Natalya wins the title. She's the best wrestler. She's the best Divas wrestler on the entire roster. But she always gets the shaft. I think she's won like one pay-per-view match in like 3 or 4 years. And so that's pretty embarrassing, especially coming from someone who is a Hart. She has the legacy and the lineage of Harts. And she's been Divas champion before, but she definitely should be again. She should be the face of the Divas division. Because she's a Hart, she's a phenomenal wrestler, she's the best wrestler on the Divas roster, hands down, and hopefully Battleground will be her opportunity, because it all lines up with the new, or the next half of the season for Total Divas, so it all makes sense. Damon Sandow loses again. I've talked about that before. RVD defeats Damon Sandow, but the funny thing is, one funny thing I realized was when RVD defeated Damon Sandow, Damon Sandow's music came on. And I was looking, and they did a panoramic shot of the crowd, and they were just sitting there like, huh? Like, it was just, and I was like that too. It was just weird. They kind of played it off, but that was a glitch in the Raw. It was a glitch in the Raw, but just about the entire Raw was a glitch. I mean, it was just a bad Raw, especially the final night of champions. Based on this Raw, this was a very low launch pad to Battleground. As a matter of fact, Battleground was hardly even mentioned. And you have 2 Raws before Battleground, but for some reason, you're not immediately pushing the pay-per-view. It's the first pay-per-view. It needs as much promotion as it could possibly have, but we barely get any mention. Not very good. Triple H fires Scott Armstrong in the office. Randy Orton versus The Miz, double count out. Miz and Orton fight post-match, but Orton gets upper hand and he bridge DDTs him off the barricade. He puts him in the ring and gives him a jumping knee drop while Miz had his the chair over his head. Kind of showcasing the old school Randy Orton. Makes sense. Especially in front of his mommy and daddy in Cleveland, Ohio, which I'm not going to go too far in how they look. Yeah, their appearance was quite interesting. Next we have Paul Heyman promo on stage with Ryback. It was kind of weird. Kissed Ryback. And I heard Ryback look at Paul Heyman, and he said, "You're too much." But I'll tell you what, Paul Heyman played the devious heel manager character. He does it phenomenal. He does it so good. And Heyman is one of the best minds and one of the best manager promo cutters in wrestling history. So although Ryback as a Paul Heyman guy still didn't matter after that segment, at least Paul Heyman did his job well. And at least Ryback gave us a reason why he attacked CM Punk. He's on this kind of reverse psychology type of deal, saying that he hates bullies, and it makes sense. But CM Punk versus Ryback, we'll probably get that at Battleground. Last year we had it at Hell in a Cell, which, interestingly enough, there's going to be no more Hell in a Cell pay-per-views because Battleground is where Hell in a Cell was the past few years. So they got rid of that gimmick pay-per-view, which makes sense because the gimmick, I'm not a big fan of gimmick pay-per-views. Elimination Chamber, still not a fan of it, but I can deal with it a bit. But Hell in a Cell, having a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view every year, I'm not a big fan of because it takes the mystique out of the gimmick match. And I don't think that you should not have a gimmick match. It's basically because we have these gimmick matches, it's like, okay, well, you can't have a random Hell in a Cell match at a main event of a pay-per-view because we know it's going to come in October. You can't have a random TLC match at the pay-per-view because we know it's coming in December. You can't have a random Elimination Chamber match at a pay-per-view to bump up a main event because we know it's going to come in February. So, for instance, if we have Battleground, if you have just a regular minor pay-per-view, you could put some really nice gimmick in Battleground to kind of bump up the anticipation, which, since this is the first year, they should. I mean, we should see a steel cage match or some type of stipulation or something because so far so bad for the build-up for Battleground. Usos defeats Real Americans and Tons of Funk, become number one contender for elimination match number one contender for the tag team titles. Hopefully this one counts because the Usos has had chance. I actually wrote an article about that, about all the chances that they had to become world tag team champions. Hopefully this one counts because, I mean, it's like making it to the finish line and being in the lead into the very end and someone passes you like right before the ribbon, right before you pass the finish line. I mean, it's just, it's very disheartening all the time when the Usos become in the tag team title picture because they never win. They've never... For them to be such a polished tag team that's had a few years, you know, to really establish themselves on main TV, they've never won a tag team title, and that's absurd. So hopefully we'll see that soon. Again, who is the longest reigning WCW champion in history? We'll try that again very, very soon here. All right, and then the main event was Daniel Bryan defeating Roman Reigns by DQ, interference by Randy Orton, Rollins, and Ambrose. Orton attempts to do a knee drop on a chair atop Daniel Bryan's head again, and then But he gets stopped by a bunch of baby faces. Finally, we get some type of backing for Daniel Bryan. He cheers. The Usos came out, Kofi Kingston, R-Truth, Zack Ryder. I'm sure he was happy at that spot. Primetime players, Dolph Ziggler, RVD. Orton retreats, but the faces take out the Shield and they celebrate. Right now, it's reported that the baby faces will be punished come next week's Raw, so at least that is something to look forward to for the upcoming Raw episode. Who knows? Maybe they'll have a spot at Battleground. Who knows? Bottom line is Battleground needs to be built, and neither Night of Champions nor the Raw really developed a good foundation for the inaugural pay-per-view. So hopefully Battleground's good. Like I said, Payback was inaugural pay-per-view, and it was good. It was very good. I wasn't too sold on Jericho versus CM Punk. The match was a bit lackluster. It was good. It was a good match, but it showed some rust in CM Punk. It was probably their worst match of the series. It wasn't a bad match whatsoever. But it was probably their worst match of the entire series. But even with that, that match was better than, you know, at least half of the matches that we see. So kudos to Chris Jericho and CM Punk for putting together a very fantastic series of matches. All right. Well, of course, we have our Raw correspondent, Derek, to let us know his thoughts on both Night of Champions and Raw. What you got for us tonight, sir?
Pretty much, I believe Night of Champions was pretty much the same thing as Monday Night Raw. They both had so many similarities. You mentioned earlier, Night of Champions just was a lackluster pay-per-view. I would have felt ripped off if I would have bought a ticket to go see that. I mean, sorry to say that. Not so much in the fact to see all the best superstars in the wrestling world right now, but when it comes to pay-per-views, I mean, that just did not take the cake. I should have been at a house show. So let's intervene that with the Monday Night Raw. Everybody, Derek the Raw correspondent here, 347-884-8452. Pancakes and Power Slams every Tuesday night, 11 o'clock. Let's get things rolling. Monday Night Raw, the fast count was discussed in the ring after Daniel Bryan came out and jumped up and down and had his good time with it. However, it was quickly taken away from Triple H. And Scott Armstrong was brought out to the ring. He was the ref who, at the Night of Champions, had a supposed fast count. That's still to be debated. Was it a fast count? Yeah, it was. And we knew something was going to happen. So, the ref claims that the Bryan was in on it the whole time. And Triple H caught up and said, hey, what's going on? Knew what was going on. Of course, RKO comes out. He's pretty upset about what's going on. And he pretty much forces Bryan to hand the title over. But the spin about this thing is Randy Orton thought that he would probably get the belt back right away. Did not happen. For that, kudos to Triple H. Keep the belt in limbo right now. What's going to come out of this whole conspiracy is what JBL was talking about the whole night. And JBL, he's last night I listened to JBL more than I did the other two. And he is such a legitimate, great commentator. I enjoy his commentary. He brings a lot of color commentary to Monday Night Raw. I really noticed that last night, and I just wanted to throw out the JBL. Also wanted to throw a name drop. Keep the Wyatts. Just keep them for doing promos. When it comes to entering work, they do not work. Not that they aren't good showmen. Their promos are almost second to none as far as the WWE goes right now, so I would keep the Wyatts, just for their promo talent and for their in-ring, what they've done to, as far as promote them in the ring, forget about it. Keep the promos going. I just had to throw a special shout-out for that. I mean, they're second to none. Keep that going. After that, Ambrose versus Ziggler, you know, that's a good chemistry between the two. Ambrose obviously lost the match. Dolph scored a good pinfall, good over Ambrose. Didn't really expect that, but good for Ziggler. Happy for him. Backstage, Stephanie makes a Big Show stay in the dressing room. What is she? Is she a babysitter, a dominatrix? It seems like Big Show, he's just turned into such a huge, disgusting mama's boy. And who is Stephanie McMahon to boss him around? I mean, again, the guy's 500 pounds, 7 foot tall, and he's acting like a total wimp. It's making me sick. I'm tired of seeing this. And I almost thought maybe last week he almost, I wouldn't say redeemed himself, but he wasn't as sappy. But this week he just, it happened again, especially a year earlier when Dusty Rhodes came out. And he was forced to punch Dusty Rhodes in the face, and he ended up just hugging him. Well, he punched him, obviously, but hugged him. Dusty, I love you. Followed him to the backstage, into the ambulance. If somebody punched you out, who in their right mind would let you into the ambulance with them? I mean, it's, why would that happen? I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to it. It was just kind of a throwaway. Too bad they used Dusty Rhodes for something simple as that. But again, this could probably be something that's going to come up in the next week or two. Chris had mentioned earlier, the three of the Rhodes boys, Cody, Goldust, and Dusty Rhodes getting together. That would do great. Against the Shield, obviously, we don't want to see Dusty Rhodes get hurt, but Dusty Rhodes has been through enough in his life, and you can just see it on the face of his body. So kudos. It was great seeing Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, back last night. Fandango versus R-Truth. A great win for Fandango over R-Truth. Any win right now is a good win for Fandango. So even over R-Truth, let's keep it real. Fandango's got a long way to go. And he's somebody that his promos were better than his actual booking and ring ability. So after that, we have Sandow versus RVD. Frog splash on Sandow. They're making Sandow look like a punk anymore, even though he's got the money in the bank. I know that's going to be a huge build-up to something coming up, probably 4 years in. I'm going to predict that Sandow is going to make a move. He has not been very successful on his own without using money in the bank. He's going to use that. It's going to shake things up, but probably not too much, because I can't really see Sandow being a great champion. That would really do a whole bunch for Monday Night Raw for the WWE product. RKO versus The Miz. Miz's hometown, Cleveland, Ohio. Been there a few times. Cleveland Browns, they need to do something good with themselves. Enough about that. But pretty much, they get counted out. He's up against RKO. Gets slammed to the post. RKO just contends to dismantle The Miz in front of his parents that were sitting front row, and his friends and family, and this whole graduating class of 1998 or whatever it is. So I understand. I know that the Vince McMahon has a running joke. If this is your town, then we're going to knock you out and beat you up in front of everybody. So I kind of expected that to happen. It did happen. It fits into what Stephanie McMahon and Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H, Stephanie McMahon-Helmsley era. That's kind of come back into fruition. I never known that anyone else has said anything about that. But RKO, that's what they want him to be. That's what he's going to be here coming up. He showed it last night against The Miz, obviously. So let's see where this pointless storyline is going to go as well. After that, Heyman wheels himself out, owes his life to Ryback. Ryback is now a Heyman guy. What else can Ryback do? I mean, what else does he have for himself? He has to take this. So, what's it going to do for him? Probably not a whole lot. But again, it's associating himself with somebody that has a name in wrestling, like Paul Heyman. Not the biggest Paul Heyman fan in the world, but Everybody knows who Palm Heyman is, if you know anything about wrestling. Associate your name with him. Ryback has been on a losing streak for so long, just on a stale, disgusting road. He needs to do something with his career. He needs to do something with his character. Can this help him out? Maybe in the short term, in the long term, probably not. Even after Paul Heyman kisses him on the cheek and Ryback says something that he loves him or I appreciate that. Kind of stupid and disgusting. But anyway, Ryback threatens to beat up CM Punk, obviously. He's a Heyman guy now, so we'll see where that goes, how that happens. I can see a feud between the two, but who cares? Tons of Funk versus the Usos versus the Real Americans. Tons of Funk eliminated. Good match against Usos and Americans. After Tons of Funk was eliminated, it really the match started to really heat up. I mean, it was a good trade between the two. They both fought pretty hard. They both had really good high spots. However, yeah, the real they keep losing, and I don't understand what the we the people is going to mean when people aren't really behind you. Zeb Coulter, again, this thing's kind of wearing out. Let's keep things fresh. I don't know how they're going to do that because just been the two, Swagger and Cesaro for so long. Just something's got to change with that, Matt, with that faction. After that, Reigns versus Bryan. Orton walks through the ring. It was a great match, better than a match that was on Night of the Champions, if you want to be honest. So, ends with a DQ against Reigns. They all gang up against Bryan, obviously. When the locker room runs out to save Bryan. Oh, that was a sweet moment. That was great. So, but honestly, that I believe to me to say, the Raw correspondent, Derek, will say, if you think me wrong, 347-884-8452. Join the chat room, Pancakes and Power Slams, live. That was the better match over any match that happened on Night of the Champions. That's just what I'm going to say. I've said enough. Chris Featherstone, if you're rocking, you're ready, back to you. Let's get this going. I'll be back later on, cover Flavor of the Week. Let's see what's up.
All right. Fantastic job as always. We're actually going to have Derek back on in about 5 minutes. So, in the meantime, I'm going to run through Impact Wrestling and SmackDown. Just real quick, again, SmackDown and Impact Wrestling, along with a ton of media, I write a review of both of those on wrestling.com every weekend. So check that out. Impact Wrestling Review, SmackDown Review. It's very fun. I have a lot of fun with those. Real quick, got an interesting email just recently about a press release from ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. They are issuing a 2-3-month full tuition scholarships to the Hart Brothers University Wrestling Training Facility. Bruce Hart joined an interview for them, and basically the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio has reached an agreement with Bruce Hart and the Hart Brothers University Training Facility to issue 2 3-month scholarships to one male and one female prospect from the United States to attend the training program. This is the press release I'm reading. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a prospective professional wrestling candidate to receive a letter of achievement from Bruce Hart upon completion of the training program. The program will consist of training that helped make many top stars in wrestling history, including Bret Hart, Tyson Kidd, Natalya Neidhart, Dynamite Kid, Chris Benoit, and many more. Bruce Hart basically says, we're looking for a vast array of potential students. We're looking for wrestlers, male, female, big, small, tall, short, any nationality, bodybuilders, MMA fighters, parkour athletes, NCAA athletes, including basketball, football, hockey, wrestlers, NFL or CFL football players, etc. Please submit your resume, including athletic history, pictures, 3 references, education history, work history, and a brief statement on why we choose you as a winner of this scholarship. Submit all that information to webmaster@prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. If you have any questions whatsoever, please contact Jersey Strong,
Jay Aletto at webmasterofprowrestlingpowers.com or Twitter at PWPowerhouse. Great email that I received today, and I definitely wanted to spread out to the Pancakes and Power Slams listeners for anyone who has an aspiration to become a wrestler. So great connection there. All right, real quick, let's just be just whisk through this and let's get on this flavor of the week. SmackDown, just a couple notable things. Big Show with apology in the ring. Got more he got triple powerbomb. More of the six diva tag match. Dancing with Superstars was funny. Miz as Misko Inferno won that one. That was funny. R.D. Evans from ROH got an opportunity to get bullied by Rod back. I'm sure he was interested in that. Paul Heyman in the Curtis Axel interview. Alberto Del Rio defeats Ricardo Rodriguez. Dolph Ziggler defeats Dean Ambrose by DQ to become number one contender for Night of Champions. And then Cutting Edge, Daniel Bryan, and Randy Orton. No Surrender, just a few nuggets here. We have Mr. Anderson being the person who was the chosen, well, he basically chose himself, Ace of the Nates member, to get the World Heavyweight Championship opportunity. Then we got the finals of the Bound for Glory series. AJ Styles defeats Austin Aries in the first round. Magnus defeats Bobby Roode in the first round. Bully Ray defeats Anderson to retain the title, which is actually a good match. Anderson gets pile driven on the stage, so looks like they're writing Anderson off. He might be the newest victim of no longer being with TNA. There's been way too many of those, but looks like he's been written off. We might see him return to Bound for Glory, but we might not see him again. We'll see. Then we got a James Storm and Gunnar Emmerich promo. Chavo Hernandez come out. Definitely don't need any more heel teams. It looks like we might be having that again. AJ Styles win the Bound for Glory series. It's pretty much a given. And then he cuts a promo about Dixie Carter, which was not very, I mean, really didn't mean anything. All right, and finally, let's go to ROH. Basically, more of the ROH title tournament. We first of all had Roderick Strong defeating Matt Taven. The second match was Kevin Steen defeating Brian Kendrick to advance. And then, unfortunately, I'm a big Jay Lethal fan. He lost to Adam Cole, but I understand that they're really trying to push Adam Cole more of a heel role now. And then finally, before we go to the flavor of the week, the answer to the longest reigning WCW champion in history goes to none other than Hulk Hogan. It was 94 when he won the title, had it for over a year. All right, flavor of the week, part two, Nation of Domination. I'm here with Derek. Let's go through six names. We went through five last week. And the remaining six we'll do this week. Crush, thumbs up or thumbs down? I'm going to say thumbs down. I didn't see any purpose for Crush to be in the Nation of Domination. It seems as if they were just trying to throw him in there to have a spot in the WWE because they really didn't have anything with him. Didn't fit the whole by any means necessary. It was just really an oddball out. Thumbs down for me.
Yeah, thumbs down. I mean, I remember when Crush first debuted with Demolition in WWE. And the Nation Domination thing didn't really make much sense. Why WWE even brought him back didn't really make much sense. So I'm going to definitely say a thumbs down for that type of group that he was with. So, I mean, not a big thumbs down for Crush himself, but as part of the Nation Domination, yeah, definitely didn't gel well.
Next we have Savio Vega. Savio Vega he was the Puerto Rican baby face. he wasn't Pedro Morales over, but they did make him over. He had a feud with Steve Austin, actually defeated Steve Austin before. And so they were making him as, you know, a over enough babyface, more kind of like a mid-card or upper mid-card babyface, and then he turns heel and eventually joins the Nation of Domination. I'm torn with this one. I do understand the refreshment, the refreshing of Savio Vega's gimmick, but honestly, ultimately, I don't think that it did anything for Savio Vega. I think if they would have continued to push him as a mid-card Pedro Morales style babyface, I think he would have done much better than becoming heel and joining the Nation of Domination and eventually the tweener faction that he had of Los Boricuas, which was one of the worst factions in WWE history. So I don't think it did anything for him. So I'm going to give Savio Vega a thumbs down.
For Savio Vega himself, I'll give him a thumbs up. Nation of Domination, because anything's better than being in the Los Boricuas. And like you had mentioned, it was kind of a weird transition. I remember when he joined. But for Savio Vega, what else did he have? I don't think he had anything to lose to join them. He had his win over Stone Cold Steve Austin, like you'd mentioned. And coming out of Los Boricuas and being the Nation, yeah, might as well. Anything good for Savio Vega. He wasn't a horrible talent. I didn't think he was bad at all. So, but obviously, like I'm going at, for the Nation, anything's better than Los Boricuas. So I'll give him personally a thumbs up for that.
All right, next we have, we'll say PG-13, they were a team, and we'll put them together in the group, J.C. Ice and Wolfie D. And of course, we know one of those. We know that J.C. Ice is the son of Dutch Mantel, which is Zeb Coulter. So, I mean, they were there since USWA, so they have some tenure. They came down to rap, you know, for quite some time for the Nation of Domination. So they were one of the originals. So I understand why, you know, I understand why they were there. Still didn't really fit the mold of the WWE's version of Nation of Domination, but because of their purpose there and because there were some, you know, there were two originals, I'm going to give them a slight thumbs up.
Yeah, and I'll give them a total thumbs down. It was totally useless for them to be there. Outside of PG-13, I don't know who they are. So, no, it was dumb. They were only with them for maybe 4 or 5 appearances, if that. Prove me if I'm wrong, but it was dumb. I do remember them, but I didn't think anything of them, gave them their credibility. What are they doing there? They're just fillers. So outside of that, nope, thumbs down.
Makes sense. I see where you're there. Yeah, I see why you did that as far as choosing that. But let me make a slight correction. It was Superstar Bill Dundee. I don't know why I said Zeb Coulter, but it was Superstar Bill Dundee. That's that Jamie Dundee is the father of Superstar Bill Dundee, and of course. We know Bill Dundee is very popular in the AWA, capturing the tag team titles with Jerry Lawler. And then, of course, he had some runs at Crockett, and he was the manager of Lord Steven Regal in WCW. He was Sir William. So, Superstar Bill Dundee, if you old school wrestlers remember him from Memphis and AWA and some slight WCW work. So
I don't know why.
That makes me change my mind about PG-13.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, superstar Bill Dundee over Dutch Mantel. So because of that, I can see why you would say thumbs up now. But now let's go next to Ahmed Johnson. I am going to give Ahmed Johnson a absolute 1,000,000,000% thumbs down. I think this was the pivotal moment in the demise of Ahmed Johnson. He was being billed as such a powerhouse, huge babyface. Even won the Intercontinental title. Was jumped by Farouk when he was with the powder blue gladiator with Sonny with the weird helmet. But he, for some reason, he was injured, came back, turned heel, joined the Nation. He was just an awkward acting heel. It did not work whatsoever. This was just a travesty it was a tragedy as well. For Ahmed Johnson, never really bounced back from this, became, a babyface and left the Nation. But after that, he lost just about all his momentum. And this was talk about your career killers. Ahmed Johnson joining Nation Domination was a career killer for him. And so this is an absolute thumbs down for me.
Yeah, thumbs down. It's a shame. He had a lot more promise when he was just Ahmed Johnson by himself. Trivia question, what was the name of his finishing move? But for him joining Nation of Domination, it was very awkward. Just why all of a sudden is he just this part of this group, this stable that defies authority and a bit of an outlaw. But, I can actually see why they made him do it, just stir up the pot, but it just didn't work for him. It didn't work for his character. It's a shame. It's one of those crapshoots that they just took. And it was the demise of Ahmed Johnson. I do give it a thumbs down just for the fact that it diminished his career, but Ahmed Johnson on himself is good, but as far as Nation Domination, no good. Thumbs down.
Absolutely. Clarence Mason is next. The manager of the Nation of Domination. I think he did a great job. I think he was needed. I think they needed a voice. They had Farouk, but at the same time, Farouk wasn't the best on the mic. Clarence Mason did a fantastic job being that voice piece for the Nation of Domination at that time. So I'll definitely give Clarence Mason a thumbs up for being a member of the Nation of Domination.
Yep, I do too. I remember Clarence Mason. That was how many years ago? He wasn't there very long, but I do. Clarence Mason was the voice for Nation of Domination. He was like the Johnny Cochran type of snooty lawyer, attorney, whatever he was. And so let's give him a thumbs up. He played his role. He did what he did for the Nation of Domination. I remember Clarence Mason. So thumbs up. I agree.
Yeah, we're talking about 16 years ago as well. That's time flies. But you did say the finishing move for Ahmed Johnson? It was the Pearl River Plunge.
Yes.
And then finally we have Mark Henry. Mark Henry debuted in the WWE in 1996, was this big, Olympic babyface, feuded with Lawler for a second. Around that time to help out Jake Roberts. And, and then he joined the Nation of Domination, kind of established himself a little bit more there. So, quickly, honestly, I'll give him a thumbs up. I think it did help his career. I think it was a bit cheesy to see a big, bulky, muscular, stocky guy to be a face at that time. I don't think it was. I mean, Ahmed Johnson did a good job, but Mark Henry was green. He didn't really understand. So I think he was face for long enough to get his name established, and then I think he made a heel turn at the right time. The Nation Domination
definitely helped him a lot, especially with his alliance with D'Lo Brown. So definitely a thumbs up for me with Mark Henry.
Yeah, me too. WWE does a lot with their Olympians that they get. They always turn them heel. If you look back to Ken Patera back in the 80s, look to Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Of course, they were going to make Mark Henry heel eventually, and it fit Mark Henry fine. Anything that Mark Henry can be a part of is great. I mean, he's not the greatest wrestler, per se, but however he does, he adds character to a lot of things that he does. Everybody's a Mark Henry fan. I mean, whether you like him or not, Mark Henry is somebody that you can always get behind just because he's such a unique guy. So it was good for him. It all of a sudden, he's this big, you know, baby face. Everybody loves him. He's great. And Nation of Domination, are you kidding me? You're the Olympic champion that everyone loves. But WWE does that a lot with their Olympians. So I agree. I definitely a big thumbs up for Mark Henry. It really launched him. It made him more, gave him a little bit more character, gave him that mean streak that he just didn't have before that. So thumbs up, definitely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Derek. Awesome job as always. 347-884-8452 is the number in your back pocket for next week. We're going to change some things up. We've got some really awesome things ahead. We've got more interviews. We've got a time adjustment, so stay tuned for that. We've got some very, very big things in store for our 100th episode. Very excited. More segments coming up, more fan interaction, reading tweets, reading Facebook. 347-884-8452 is put number put in your back pocket. Check out Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling, Facebook, facebook.com/Crave Wrestling. And then, of course, check my Chris Featherstone's articles on the Bleacher Report and on WrestlingInc.com. Check out my weekly Wednesday article called Retro Wednesday, and it's always fun going back in the vault. Thank you so much for listening again. Continue to increase those numbers like we've done, like we continue to do, and I continue to see increased numbers. So thank you so much for your support. Over 3.5 million reads on Bleacher Report. That is incredibly humbling. Thank you so much. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.